From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in April when the first set of extensive data came in regarding air quality in American cities during the pandemic. The skies were markedly cleaner. There was less smog in L.A., less traffic in New York, fewer cars on the road everywhere. If there was any pandemic silver lining, that seemed to be it. And it even inspired a social media meme. Nature is healing. That was the good news during this pandemic, at least environmentally. Maybe there'd be a good impact. But then we saw the evidence move in a different direction. Plastic usage has surged during this pandemic. Oceans have been hit hard in recent months. COVID-19 triggered an estimated global usage of 129 billion face masks and 65 billion gloves every month. Scientific American says that if we stitch together all of the masks manufactured already and projected to be produced during the pandemic, we'd be able to cover the entire landmass of Switzerland. And then came the takeout. Plastic containers and restaurant takeout are now a common part of our lives. I've seen them plenty in my own life. More people are shopping online. There's more packaging when ordering from the Amazons of the world. So it's plastic all the time now. And with the pandemic causing new record levels of daily cases around the world, things aren't getting better with this pandemic. The winter could be rough. We could be even more inside, more online. Where do we go next? How can we limit our plastic usage? Our guests have plenty to say on this subject and more as it relates to waste. And I'll welcome them now. Harsha D'Souza is Assistant Director for Campus Sustainability at RIT. Harsha, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan.
Welcome to Fena Mandalong, who is MRF Operations Manager for Modern Disposal. Fena, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Evan.
Melissa Young is Assistant Director at the Syracuse University Center for Sustainable Community Solutions and Board Member for the New York State Reduction, Reuse, and Recycling. Melissa, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Evan.
And Marielle Jensen-Battaglia is back with us, a local resident who has significantly reduced her use of plastic products and has educated me on a lot in just the last couple of years. Marielle, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
I love telling people your story, Marielle, because you're someone who gave up, basically gave up plastic for Lent one year, but, you know, never having to figure at the time that eventually you're going to be living in a pandemic where everything's plastic. Takeout containers are plastic, masks, gloves, there's so much plastic. How have you had to cope with that, Marielle? How's that gone?
Yeah, so when I think about this, the kind of comparison comes to mind that you hear sometimes about the fire in the trash can versus the fire outside the office building, right? And in this case, maybe it's a grease fire on the stove. COVID-19 is creating a really large demand for single-use and disposable plastic. But that's kind of our immediate concern that we need to deal with. We need to deal with this pandemic. But then the long-term effects of the plastic use are still going to be there when the pandemic comes to its end or just as time progresses. So I think in your introduction, you covered a few things that immediately became apparent to me as someone who's trying to use less plastic. You know, I love my local restaurants and eateries. I want to support them during this time. And yet that means a lot more disposable ware, cups, forks, spoons, that kind of thing. Again, not wanting to kind of go into stores and expose myself unnecessarily towards the beginning, especially of the pandemic, I was ordering a lot of things online, and it's so hard to see what they're going to come in before they actually show up to your door. You may think that you're ordering something that actually is going to replace a plastic single-use item, but it comes wrapped in tons of plastic. So it's just hard to predict and to anticipate these things and then know how you're going to deal with them. These months in, I think there are some ways that we can reflect and look back and start to, on an individual personal level, return to making better choices for plastic use.
Yeah, I ordered a Spider-Man shirt for my 8-year-old, and it had like a little Spider-Man toy that came with it. And this toy is probably 2 inches tall, and the amount of plastic is enough to choke a mammoth just to hold this toy on this pack. I couldn't believe it. And so just to your point there, Marielle, you don't know what you're getting sometimes when you make an order online. You may not know when you're ordering from restaurants. But if you're ordering takeout at restaurants, Marielle, are you asking in advance, hey, what kind of containers? Try this. I don't need utensils. I mean, how do you go through that?
Yeah, so you have a couple of options, a couple of ways to think about it. Certainly, you can call ahead and ask, you know, would this be okay in a to-go container? Could I bring something myself? A lot of restaurants have put restrictions on that and continue to do so from a sanitation perspective. They just don't want to use anything that might have been touched by another person to protect their staff. But there are restaurants that use compostable and renewable supplies as their takeout packaging. And so if you can ask about that, I think it does two things. One, you know what you're getting into, so you'll be able to maybe get an item that is better for the planet. And then two, if they don't offer that item and enough people start asking about it, you know, hopefully that'll give them the sign that it could be a good direction for them to go in.
Well, let's ask your panel, your co-panelists on these various issues. Harsha Dassoud, how do you see the challenge during this pandemic? And how did you sort of see it shaping up as you thought about not only your work as assistant director for campus sustainability at RIT, but just in daily life as we went from, you know, March through the spring into the summer? What were you noticing?
So first of all, thanks, Marielle, because I think you covered a lot of the things that I've been thinking about these last several months, you know, the trade-offs between single-use plastic but supporting a small business. I think, you know, when I think about who would miss out on business if all of us started only supporting businesses that are not providing plastics, I think, you know, oftentimes it's minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, a lot of Asian businesses that I did support before the pandemic when things were normal, so to speak, have gone to gone back to using plastic and single-use disposable items. So, you know, there's a risk here in employment is another big issue during the pandemic, right? So I do try to balance those two things, that it's okay for me to support a small business in their time of need right now, but then redoubling our efforts to say no to plastic in other ways post-pandemic, but also during the pandemic. So as far as ordering things from Amazon or ordering things from online that will come in packaging, is there a local alternative where you could do curbside pickup? Because then you're avoiding the travel-related emissions of those items. There's so much more to it than just the plastic waste. At RIT, you know, Evan, the last time I was on this show, I was so excited to announce that we had a new campaign called Ditch the Disposables, and we were doing away with some single-use items in dining halls. And because of COVID, there are real safety concerns that we're not really able to address without going to a takeout-only kind of system right now. So it's temporary. We know that. We are trying to bring back, reusable containers and silverware and everything as soon as possible. And again, redoubling our efforts after this is going to be key, I think.
What do you think is the hardest part to get this done the way you'd want to see it done, Harsha?
You mean hardest part to bring back disposables?
Yeah. And just to get people on board with the changes that you see.
So I think there's a balance between an actual risk versus a perceived risk, right? And with COVID, there might be that a lot of institutions have been trying to balance that. We don't want the campus to feel unsafe. And so there is a risk that is posed by the, you know, use of reusable containers. Is it greater than the risk before COVID happened? We don't know. The data isn't really there. Chances are it is. Chances are that it's not. And there's a lot of different studies out there. And I think, like, balancing the desires of people and helping people feel safe to come back to campus, come back to their place of work, all of those need to be balanced with safety, and ultimately safety and human lives come first.
All right, let me turn to Fena Mandelong, who's an operations manager for Modern Disposal. Fena, first, why don't you tell us what Modern Disposal is?
Oh, Modern Disposal is service provider for Western New York for waste and recycling solutions, and I'm the manager of their recycling facility.
So how do you see the challenge during this pandemic, and how did you see it shaping up, especially as we went from spring into the summer?
Well, we could see a lot of the patterns seen across the U.S., you know, more people staying at home, more household recycling, less business restaurant recycling. We also saw a dip in plastics pricing that was seen across the country as well as oil prices went down. And, you know, most recently we've had some trouble, challenges in moving the plastics. It's not just about the pricing, but also the ability to have an end market. When the end market isn't there, the mill can't, you know, gets backed up in what they're producing, and that backs up into our recycling facility as well.
Well, and I think, honestly, Fennin, when I talk to people just who listen to this program and try to stay on top of what you can recycle and what you can't and what the market is doing, there's this idea lately that that recycling itself was oversold, and that people wonder, is anything getting recycled these days, especially plastic? How do you know?
Yes, well, I can attest that we are still recycling what we can. I think it is important to remember the reduce, reuse, recycling, right? Like our previous guests have been talking about reducing their plastic use, reusing it when possible, and recycling really is the third choice, right? And from our perspective, even within what we produce here, plastics is only 5 or 10%, because as a lot of the, you know, articles going around say, a lot of the plastics don't make it to our plant and aren't recyclable. All the medical waste, all the single use, all the plastic around the Spider-Man toy, none of that is recyclable, you know, in effectively. Mostly what's recyclable are the bottles. You know, larger, heavier, thicker plastics are the more recyclable ones, you know. We are proud to be collaborating with UB Department of Chemical and Biological Engineering to finding solutions to improve the viability of plastics recycling, including those films that are currently not very recyclable. But that's something that's at the beginning of the process.
How often do we see wish cycling still happening? And that's a term that I think I first heard from Kate McCardle on this program, talking about the way that people will throw something in the bin, hoping that it could be recycled, or assuming that it could be recycled. Maybe it's got some plastic in it. Maybe they don't know. And often it causes more problems than it's worth there. How often does that happen?
It still does happen. You know, we were very excited about the plastic bag ban in put into place by the state, and we're very excited to see the effects of that. Of course, the pandemic interrupted that, and people were allowed to use plastic bags out of safety concerns again. So we'll have to wait and see when we're able to put the ban back into place in full force. But there is still quite a bit of wish cycling happening. It mostly ends up being an expensive trip to the landfill. But we do recycle everything that is possible to recycle that has a market.
Melissa Young is Assistant Director at the Syracuse University Center for Sustainable Community Solutions and a board member for New York State Reduction, Reuse, and Recycling. That's NYSAR3. Melissa, how have you seen this issue over the last 7 months?
Hi, thank you. I just want to say I appreciate the comments that have already been mentioned by the panelists, really helping me think about what our challenge is. And what we've been dealing with is really trying to figure out how to help communities communicate. Going back to your question about wish recycling, it's still happening, and communities have been gathering since 2018 from the public, private, and nonprofit sectors to figure out how to help communicate what goes in the bin and what doesn't, so that wish cycling doesn't happen and the community and the public is well informed. We've been working on a campaign called New York Recycle Right New York, and that was created by coordinators throughout the state in a stakeholder group that was developed by the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. And now the Governor Cuomo announced in early September a partnership with University of Buffalo, Stony Brook, and the SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry. And we're working with SUNY ESF to take on that Recycle Right New York campaign and develop a website that will have resources available to the public, as well as information about what goes in the bin and what doesn't. And so we're working with that stakeholder group that I mentioned to make sure that that resource is useful for them and reaches a broad audience. And that will be coming out in 2021.
Let me read a quick comment, Melissa, from a listener named Joel, who said that, would it be a good idea to explain that recycling is a process that does not end until something new is made from that material? Is that correct? Is that correct, Melissa?
I think that's fair. I think that what we need to really think about, again, are the top of the hierarchy solutions, how to reduce and reuse before we recycle. Recycling is a solution that we need to work on now while the materials are being made, but what we really need to do is try to think about how to shift away from the reliance on these materials. I would say as recycling is a solution right now, it is only as good as it becomes a new material.
Well, before I grab a quick phone call, let me ask Mariel Jensen Battaglia, who, you know, Mariel, ever since we first talked about you giving up plastic for Lent, I have thought, well, the easiest thing to do to figure out if a certain product, often some plastic or all plastic or whatever, how to figure out if it's recyclable is just not to use it. I mean, just find a way to not have plastic. And do you find yourself doing much recycling? I mean, do you avoid most plastic pretty successfully? And do you feel confident that you do know what can and can't be recycled, Mario?
Yeah, so I think that you summarized this really well, Evan, just in previous discussions on connections and also just discussions in my personal life, a lot of confusion about what can and can't be recycled on two levels. One would be the level of just at the moment you're about to put it in the bin, does this have a recycling emblem on it? Is it cleaned enough and is it separated enough from the other things to go into the recycling stream? At the residential level, for example, that's one. But the second is on a slightly more informed level, what's going to happen to this once it does go onto the truck and supposedly get recycled? You know, I think there's a lot of consternation there, knowing will this ultimately get recycled or, as one of the other panelists so well put it, just have an expensive trip to a landfill. And we're I think here that's a concern on both levels for me. And so I completely agree that reduce is the most important step in the chain. And I think we have to be careful that it doesn't need to fall all on the consumer. But as individual consumers, you know, that's where I have my control, right? I can control whether I use plastic or not. And so I have tried to do things to just reduce the number of recyclables that I make. So that is a whole separate thing from reducing the number of sort of single-use plastics, especially those that can't be recycled at all, looking at those plastics that are going in the recycling bin and saying, did I need to actually use that in the first place, or was there an alternative? So a couple of things, and I won't take too long, but a couple of things that you can do, a couple of ways that you can personally think about it is to substitute something reusable for what you're about to recycle, even if it's plastic. If that's a thing you can use again and again, that's going to take it out of the waste stream. You can substitute something that's non-plastic, like metal or glass or paper, and then you could potentially make the item yourself so that it doesn't have to come in packaging because you produce it right in your own home. So things like laundry detergent sometimes can be made by hand or a baked good, et cetera.
All right. Listeners, if you've got questions or comments on recycling, on plastic usage, on cutting down waste during the pandemic, maybe where you see a lot more waste than we did pre-pandemic. We'd love to know your thoughts about how you're handling this and maybe have our panel answer any questions you may have. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. Or you can email the program connections at WXXI.org. Rich in Rochester with the first question. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, how are you doing today, Evan?
Good, sir.
My question is, you remember the scandal where all the heavy metals that we thought were being recycled from computers was actually going to places in India and places like that? Is the same thing happening with the plastics? Is there any way for these recycling companies to know where their stuff is ending up at? Or has there been stuff put in place to prevent that from happening?
Yeah, I mean, are you concerned? Are you concerned that people are lying about products being recyclable go ahead.
They did it with the heavy metals with the computer industry. They lied to us and said that they were sending these all this stuff was being recycled, but really it was just being dumped in these villages and India and stuff, and poisoning people with the mercuries and the other heavy, dangerous metals. Is the same thing happening with the plastics? Or do the recyclers even know this when they send it out?
No, I think we put it all in the ocean.
That might be part of what's happening. But I wonder if these recyclers, do they know where their plastic is going?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great question, Rich, and I appreciate it. And let me also say, as much as my flippant comment felt good to get a little jab in at really humanity, it's not funny. And the problem is getting worse. Scientific American had a really good write-up on just during the last 7 months what's happened to plastics in the ocean. I mean, this is a very serious situation. Fenna, as someone who is the operations manager for Modern Disposal, what do you make of Rich's concern? Do we know where everything's going?
Yes, Rich. So a lot of the plastics, we do know where they're going. A lot of our PET, for example, goes down to a plant in Alabama. Mohawk, they make carpets. And I was going to say that, you know, recycled material sometimes becomes flashy packaging that people want to advertise that it's made out of recycled content. But then sometimes it becomes an everyday object where the producer doesn't even advertise that it's post-consumer use, recycled content, such as carpeting. And none of our plastics are shipped overseas anymore. In the past, that was true, that some plastics were being shipped overseas, ending up in a village in China, and then they were using hand labor to sort it out. But that's not the case anymore. And so it is going to mills, you know, in Michigan that provide, you know, the plastics for your new Tide bottles. It goes into piping for construction. So those types of things. And we generally do know where it's going. So you could always ask your local provider where the end use users are.
Let me just read a little bit before I kick it over to Melissa Young for thoughts on this. I'll just read a little bit more from what Scientific American says about plastics during the pandemic. Quote, in the Western world, much of the plastic we've been using ends up either in landfills in North America or incinerated in Europe, and a small amount, 10% on average, gets recycled. The U.S. has about 9,000 recycling facilities, most of which are run by municipalities and tied to local budgets. And as states bear the brunt of COVID-19-related health and unemployment costs, some municipalities are suspending their recycling services. In the developing world, plastic often ends up mismanaged in open dumps, eventually leaking into the environment, ultimately making its way into rivers and then into the oceans. So that's what we've been dealing with there. Melissa, any thoughts for Rich's phone call there?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, what we need to do is reduce our reliance on this material, and that's the critical thing, top of the hierarchy. But while we're doing that, while we're in transition, moving away from having to use plastic, we need to recycle as much as we can, and the best way to do that is to work with every stakeholder that's part of the system, and that's the consumer putting materials into the bin, that's helping improve technologies for sorting, and that's building more manufacturing. And so it's really a team effort that everyone needs to be part of, and finding more end markets, I think, is critical to all of this.
What I'm going to do now is we're going to take our only break of the hour. We've got more phone calls and emails coming in as we talk about plastic usage really surging during the pandemic, plastic waste surging. Some of it ends up in the ocean, some of it landfills, some of it you think is being recycled, and a lot of it's not. And maybe some solutions as well. We want to be solutions oriented. So we'll take Betsy and Brighton's phone call on that subject after our only break. We've got some emails to work in and a lot to share from our guests. Mariel Jensen Battaglia is a local resident who has significantly reduced her use of plastic products. And we love hearing her perspective on this. Melissa Young, you just heard, is assistant director of the Syracuse University Center for Sustainable Community Solutions and a board member for New York State Reduction, Reuse, and Recycling. That's NYSAR3. Harsha Dassoud is assistant director for campus sustainability at RIT. And our thanks to Fenna Mandelang, who is MRF Operations Manager for Modern Disposal, who was able to join us for the first half hour. We'll welcome another colleague after this, our only break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, the death of Daniel Prude in police custody has led to conversations about police training. What are officers trained to do in specific situations? Should that training be changed? We talk with a retired RPD sergeant and a retired RPD lieutenant about the state of police training. That's coming your way Tuesday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and I want to welcome in Gary Carroll, who is a solid waste recycling specialist at Erie County and a board member for New York State Reduction, Reuse, and Recycling, who has just joined us now for the second half hour here. Gary, welcome. Thanks for making time.
Oh, thanks a lot for doing the show and for having me, and also thanks for to Fenna, because she really gave a lot of great information, and I'm happy to supplement that.
How concerned are you, Gary, about waste, especially during the pandemic? The plastic use, plastic usage, but also waste of all kinds.
Yeah, clearly it's a huge problem. I think the thing that most concerns me is the huge uptick of takeout. Because that just in and of itself creates so much more. You know, we all want to go out to dinner, but we can't necessarily go into the restaurants, so we're supporting our local restaurants. But, you know, a lot of these places have all this plastic takeout. So that's one of my biggest concerns. And I tend, if I find a place that has like a cardboard alternative or some kind of hybrid, I try to use them. And I also am concerned about all of this stupid plasticware that they always throw in the bags. And, we try to, you know, when you order, you try to remember to say no plasticware because everyone's eating the stuff at home. So those are some of my big concerns.
Well, let me just continue with listener phone calls and questions and comments, because I think those are the seeds of some really great conversation here. And Betsy in Brighton is next. Go ahead, Betsy.
Hi. My suggestion is that as a person in my midlife, I don't need more stuff. So when my kids ask me what I want for the holidays or Mother's Day or birthdays, if they're not going to make me something like a sweater that, you know, that they're putting their love into, then I ask them for more environmentally sound products that might be a little bit more expensive. So one year my daughter got me bamboo toothbrushes that have natural bristles on them, and those have been great. And I'm also getting some laundry soap that comes in like it almost looks like a piece of paper that I can add water to, so I'm not adding more plastic and laundry detergent. So all the things that I really need but are a little bit more pricey, I find that that's a really good gift. The other thing is I think that we need to do a little bit more public service announcements, like the Give a Hoot, Don't Pollute, I think was a really successful program for the country, and I think there needs to be a lot more about reusing things or not purchasing things. And, you know, people have been talking about the lack of canning supplies. So my daughter keeps beehives, and I've been collecting jars from a lot of my friends and students to give to her so she can store her honey in for sales, and we've just been repainting the caps. Also using paper for kind of craft projects, origami. I noticed at the 490 Community Garden they were using old cardboard boxes to keep weeds down and then putting mulched compost on top. And I decided to take my newspapers and put them into the garden to do the same thing, keep the weeds down, and they eventually decompose and add to the earth. So those are my suggestions.
Awesome stuff. Betsy, thank you so much for this phone call. Marielle, is she related to you? I mean,
it sounds like we should be friends.
I know. What do you make of what you heard there, Marielle?
Sure. Yeah, I was going to say I have a response. I think right under the surface of everything that Betsy was just saying is this this capitalistic paradox, right? This consumeristic paradox, which is really, you just need to have less. And a lot of marketing is out there saying, get this new product, it's more sustainable. But if it's something that you're going to use once and never need again, or sits on a shelf gathering dust, you know, that's not really helping the situation. You're just kind of consuming more. So really what you need to do is I talk about doing a plastic diary and a plastic diet. So the plastic diary is you look at everything that you throw out that's plastic. Maybe you keep it aside in a different trash bag for a month. And then based on that, you say, which ones of these things that I'm throwing away do I really need to replace with something reusable or just stop using in the first place? And then that's the diet part of it, really. And I think it's important to treat it like a diet because we wouldn't say if you miss one day of a diet, you know, you happen to be out and you're with other folks and you're getting takeout from somewhere and they give you the takeout in Styrofoam, you know, that's not a criteria to say, I give up on this. I'm not going to do it anymore. You just get back on the diet and you keep trying again.
Well, and let me ask the other panelists about the other part of Betsy's phone call, which I think is important. She says that, you know, give a hoot, don't pollute was catchy and people remember it. And maybe there needs to be, you know, sort of a new campaign in some sort. But I think maybe I'm wrong. I'll start with Gary on this, but I want to ask all of you. Recycling, pro-recycling campaigns were easy. It's a lot more complex to say, recycle, if you must, if we can use it. The markets are really in flux here, and a lot of plastic still can't get recycled. But try; it might be worth it if you can. Mostly just reduce. I mean, like, that's not as sexy. Reduce is the most important aspect of reduction, reuse, and recycling, because if you reduce, then you don't have to reuse. Then you don't have to recycle. Can we find a sexy way to make a campaign out of that, Gary? What do you think?
I think the standard reduce, reuse, recycle, you know, there's three R's, recycle is the third R. So I think I know Melissa said that, and I know that she's going to mention the Recycle Right campaign is going to deal with this as well. But you're right, it's more nuanced. There's no question that a big part of our message is going to be don't buy it, and that, you know, somewhat goes against the American way. So we really have to think about, you know, what people are going to pay attention to. And I think the other issue here is convenience, because, you know, a lot of these plastic items make our lives easier. And I know personally when I learned that, you know, that not as much of the plastic was getting recycled, I stopped buying my lettuce in a plastic bag or a plastic container. Well, now I got to wash my lettuce and dry it and do all this stuff. So, you know, it takes longer than the 10 seconds to just rip something open and throw it in a bowl. So that, you know, that's just part of this issue that we sort of are retraining people.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Melissa?
I think everyone has a role. I think that, we have a role to educate the community about how to reduce contamination in the recycling stream so that we can help municipal recyclers handle the materials and be able to market the product. We also, we need the industry, Coca-Cola, Nestle, PepsiCo, we need them to all stick to their promises about using recycled content so that they use that material. I think that what we need is a campaign that shows that there's hope in using recycling as a transition away from, you know, while we're transitioning away from using the material, this is the current solution. Do we want it to be the solution forever? Probably not. We want eventually to be less reliant on plastic materials. But in the meantime, what we need, I think, is a message of hope, a message of something that everybody can be part of. So I think that we're working on that with Recycle Right New York. I love the tagline, give a hoot, don't pollute. I think, you know, what people are going to be looking for in recycling and beyond this November, no matter which party you're with, is hope that we can unite and come up with some solutions that work for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Harshita, what do you think?
Oh, so many thoughts going through my head right now. I think, you know, going back to the, you know, it was in 1992 that George H.W. Bush at the Rio de Janeiro Earth Summit said the American way of life is not up for negotiations, period. And when you think about what really is the American way of life, you know, our economy is based on consumption, right? The more we consume, the better the economy will be and the happier we will all be. That's the narrative that has been framed in our society for many, many decades. And so I think, how do you reverse that cycle? How do you convince people that, no, we don't need to buy so much? And this idea that, what do we need to buy versus what do we want to buy? That's the key here. And if there is a catchy, sexy campaign, I promise you RIT students can come up with it. So after, I'm taking lots of notes. So after this, I'm going to talk to a few students, be like, hey, let's try to tackle this particular challenge, this marketing challenge that we all face. And then ultimately, you know, as long as our basic needs are met, that is key. And how can we do that during a pandemic? So for a lot of us, you know, again, supporting local, reducing packaging, if you're able to go to the public market once a week and bring your own grocery bags and produce bags and shop right there, bringing reusables wherever possible, so your own water bottle, cutlery, bags, of course. Unfortunately, you know, during a pandemic, for a lot of students that live on campus, they don't have that much of a choice. But the rest of us do, like I do, and I, you know, we try to do the best we can with focusing on needs rather than wants. And you know, I'm taking so many notes, love the idea of, with the holidays coming up, like let's not gift more stuff that will someday end up in a landfill that came wrapped in all this packaging that we don't need. And educating yourself on how to properly recycle, and that might include separating out things at the source, which we're not used to doing. Even where I live, we do mixed recycling. But I'm trying to be really mindful of separating out paper from plastic, from cans, and washing them out and rinsing and doing it right from the get-go. That, I think, is really key.
Just to follow up on one point, I was not familiar with the George H.W. Bush quote from 1992 about the American way of life. But are you suggesting that, absent sort of a cultural reckoning, we will never really get to where we need to go with this issue?
I don't know if it's a cultural reckoning. Maybe it is. It's more of a... I think we just need to rethink our economic systems worldwide, right? We're based on a GDP, and instead we reshift our focus to thinking about, you know, the triple bottom line and the sustainable development goals by the United Nations, the first of which is no poverty, zero hunger, good health and well-being. And all of these are only possible. We can only have good health and well-being when we stop focusing on making the most profits. I think I forget who, but somebody mentioned that companies like Coca-Cola and producers need to do better, right? But right now, the incentive is not there to repurpose old plastic. Unfortunately, during the pandemic, right now, it's cheaper to produce virgin plastic than it is to recycle. And a lot of companies spend a tiny fraction of their profits on recycling and the majority of their profits on everything else. So how do we shift that balance? And that has to come from a lot of different places, from consumers, certainly. Like, we need to be voting with our dollars. We need to be holding corporations that we support accountable. And then we also, I think there is a place for government here and a certain amount of regulation, too. And it's a balance. There's not one easy solution. There's no one I can point to and be like, you're the reason. This is the way it is. But what do we all, what role do we all play in our society, in our culture, in the systems that we occupy and influence? And how do we create meaningful change over time? Unfortunately, time is running out. So how do we, you know, there's a sense of urgency, but there's a lot of change that needs to happen. So does that, I was trying to be diplomatic.
Yeah, no,
response.
Yeah,
but.
Go ahead, Gary.
I wanted to point out, just as far as government regulation, I think this plastic bag ban is a perfect example. For years, we've been telling people, bring your own bag, bring your own bag. There's no reason you shouldn't bring your own bag. And yet that did not have the impact. It took government to implement a ban
And all of a sudden, you go to the store now, most people have bags with them. No one wants to pay 5 cents for anything. So, you know, it would be nice to think that these changes would occur. How hard is it to bring a bag? But nobody does it. But now, I walk through the store, everybody has their bag. So,
yeah,
you know, as much as people rally against government regulation, I think in this case, it's what worked.
I just
I would briefly want...
No, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. How about we do Melissa first and then Mario? Go ahead, Melissa.
Oh, I think somebody else was trying to
talk. I'm sorry. Yeah. Mario, go ahead. It might have been harsher than Mario. Go ahead, Mario.
Yeah, I love the direction this conversation is going because I think that there is a certain amount of a combination of personal guilt and then a feeling of sort of ineffectiveness that does happen when you're an individual who's trying to care about this, right? You feel guilty about the plastic that you're using and you feel like your tiny contribution to reducing plastic waste isn't going to do anything. And so partly to combat that, I just like to remind myself that things like this plastic bag ban do have effects and we can work through these broader measures that are going to help reduce plastic use among people that are trying to be intentional about it and people that aren't. I think, Evan, on a past program talking about plastic bag ban, you talked about regulation of indoor and outdoor smoking and smoking bans in public places and like how it was sort of similar to the initial pushback. Mm-hmm. We're changing something. It's so hard. And then all of a sudden you're just used to it. It's just what we do now. But I like to think about it on the level of trying to tell people to stop smoking individually. Your doctor tells you don't smoke, right? It's about you. And then at some point, smoking just becomes so hard from a societal perspective that we see the numbers plummet. So I really think you need both approaches. You need to work on individual responsibility and agency, but also there has to be some global higher level regulatory changes to support reduction in plastic use.
Okay. And was that Harsha jumping back into?
Yes. And I forgot what I was going to say before, but I think now, like thinking about the last comment that was made, things are changing on a global, level with China refusing to take, our plastics from back in the day. And so, you know, even the last few years, the markets have been shifting and that does have an effect on us here in America. So I think the challenge is that telling people it's the right thing to do isn't enough. And I think, you know, there's so many other arguments that need to be made from a dollars perspective, from a human health perspective and equity and all of that. Because what might be the right thing to do for me is different from what might be the right thing to do from somebody else. So this is a complicated issue and it's, you know, plastics are very important, but not all of the waste that we produce. So there was talk about food, there was talk about, electronic waste, but then, you know, thinking about the food systems and how much food is wasted, this is a complicated topic.
Well, and we don't really do a lightning round on this show, but we've got so many phone calls. I'm going to get as many as we can here. So let's do it, and then we'll get our guests to respond to whatever ones they want here. John in Irondequoit. Go ahead, John.
Hello. So I was wondering about those envelopes with the plastic windows in them. Like, if you throw those in recycling, do they ruin the whole bunch? Should we be pulling the plastic out? What do we do with those things?
Good question. Gary, Melissa, anybody know?
Those little plastic windows are not a problem. So go right ahead and put that in your recycling.
Okay, there you go. John, green light on that. Peter, next in Rochester. Go ahead, Peter.
Hello. Yes, I'm calling in terms of Sierra Club's interest in this, too, and a couple of points. So one is the way back when I was getting my master's degree at Syracuse, we studied a case called Cradle to Grave around this whole issue. And I think for survival on Earth, this has really got to become the ultimate way of considering that each thing that is proposed to being manufactured has to consider where the material's coming from, what's the cost of the environment, how are they transported, et cetera, et cetera. And then at the end, the grave part is a certain percentage of that has to be able to be completely reused to build new things so that there's almost nothing left that has to be wasted. And we're smart enough to figure those things out. So that's one. And then I'd just like to point out how probably one of the best ways that's been talked about here is using incentives to get people to do things rather than just laws. And so I, when I was at a conference about this sort of thing way back in about 20 years ago in South Africa, I heard about a case in Germany, which seemed quite ingenious, and that was to reduce the waste. The government said in this particular area that they were going to start weighing the trash and you were going to pay for your waste disposal by the weight. And so there was a big ruckus of people because they said, we don't have any control over this. When we buy stuff, it's in all this packaging and we have to get rid of it. And so this caused some turmoil, but the government finally changed the rule and said, you may bring any packaging from something you bought in a store back to the store, and then the store has to pay for its removal. And they said the change in packaging went, it went overnight. Packages became much smaller and lighter and everything else. So that's just a thought.
Yeah, Peter, thank you very much. I mean, Harsh, at RIT, some of the smartest people in packaging sciences have been there. Do you think that the production of packaging is getting smarter and in the direction you want to see it go, Harshita?
I would say yes. Looking at some of the research in our packaging science program, I'm optimistic. There's more research on, you know, biofilm, but also how can we package things in a way that reduces the items in it. And you know, from a corporation perspective, ultimately, you know, you mentioned cradle-to-grave approach. The industry has been looking at a cradle-to-cradle approach for a lot of different things. So if corporations did keep the end of life of their product in mind when it's being produced, that really is a key to, you know, eventually getting us to a circular economy in terms of our materials use.
Earl and Irondequoit next. Got to keep it tight. Go ahead, Earl.
Hi. Yeah, a lot of my thunder has been stolen. So two things. One, I want to give a shout out to my favorite restaurant here in Irondequoit, Atlas Eats, who all their packaging, or the vast majority of their takeout packaging, is compostable. The only thing that's in plastics are liquid things, which we recycle. Secondly, I wanted to shift the conversation, and it always gone this way, to the producer. I mean, as consumers, yes, we can reduce, but putting the burden on individuals for what a company chooses to do, other than choice, it's almost ridiculous. For example, Germany has been mentioned. I believe that the automobile industry in Germany has mandate laws, regulations regarding how much content has to be reusable. Maybe there's a combination of reusable and recyclable, and it's very, very high percentage. Is there a role for government? Absolutely, because government is the only institution really that can influence and change producers in this kind of an economy and environment.
Yeah, Earl, let me just jump in and say, I think that's a really interesting point. Every time I hear Mariel's ideas, I think, you know, maybe one person and five people on your block doing this is not going to change the entire world, but it might put upward pressure. The more people who do this on their own and demand better, you know, sort of outcomes might put upward pressure. And I wonder, Melissa Young, if you see it that way. I mean, because I think the point from Earl is really well taken, that you can't ask individuals to solve everything when there's so much that comes from the top down. How do you see it, Melissa? I lost you, Melissa. You might be on mute.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There you go.
Here I am. I said I absolutely agree. I don't think it's all on the individual. The individual can certainly help. You know, like I said, reducing contamination, but we are also working with a newly created center called the New York State Center for Sustainable Materials Management that's going to be housed at SUNY ESF, and it's going to involve multi-sector, multidisciplinary partners and stakeholders that will be working together to find solutions and to find more benefits of recycling for the environment, but, you know, making sure that it's also helping the economy and creating jobs as well. More jobs in landfills, that's for sure, and incinerators.
It's like we could have done a whole show just on what restaurants are doing based on the emails that have come in as well, and there's so much interest and a wide range in what restaurants are doing. And maybe it's good just to ask the next time you call for takeout. I'll offer Marielle the last thoughts here, about 30 seconds. Ways to maybe shift that individual behavior and just kind of make it a habit. How do you start building the habit, Marielle?
Yeah, so one thing that I recommend beyond the plastic diary where you check your trash to see what you're throwing out, beyond the plastic diet where you try to stop or reuse the plastic that you are consuming, is to be prepared with sort of a plastic diaper bag. So people that have kids, they go out of the house, they bring their diaper bag with them that has all the things for their child. You can have your own reusables bag that you take with you, right? You've got your bags for the bag for the grocery store. Maybe you've got a to-go container for food or for a beverage. You might even have like a reusable smaller bag for something that doesn't fit in one of those containers. So just be prepared when you go out, and then don't be ashamed to say no. So when you're standing there and someone's offering you that piece of plastic cutlery and you don't need it, say, no thanks, that's not for me. And every time you do that, you are making a difference, even if it's small.
Marielle, always good. Thanks for the insight, the perspective, and I know we'll talk again.
Thanks, Evan.
Marielle Jensen-Battaglia and Melissa Young, thanks for making the time from NICE-R3. Thanks for the expertise. And Gary Carroll, same. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you very much.
And
appreciate
our thanks to Harshad Asood. Harshad is Assistant Director for Campus Sustainability at RIT. Good luck there, and thanks for the expertise as well, Harshad.
Thanks, Evan.
Wonderful conversation. And listeners, I know we did not get through all the calls and emails. There's a whole lot coming in. We'll stay with this subject on future days. Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. I'll see you on TV with a debate tonight at 8 p.m. on WXXI TV.